Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to another episode of Nightmare Alley, the detour podcast in the Nightmare on Film Street feed. I'm John.
I'm Kim.
And we are here today to talk with writer-director Natalie Erica James about her debut feature, Relic, coming July 10th.
From IFC Midnight.
I don't know if you'll remember, if we go in the Wayback Playback Machine, 2017, Fantastic Fest. Kim and I were talking about a few short films that year. In fact, I think at the end of the year, when we were putting together our top 10 feature films of the year, we made a point to mention two short films, and one of which was a little film called Creswick, directed by Natalie Erica James.
Yeah, in the same vein, too, as Relic, both deal with kind of a familial horror. There's some ancestral-related... I don't know how much I want to talk about this movie, John. It's really hard not to... I don't think it's spoiling it, but... Oh, boy.
We want people to go in as blind as possible, right?
I mean, we always kind of want people to go into movies with as little info as possible. But I think with Relic, there's such an emotional impact to the movie that you almost just want to, like, sit somebody down in front of it and put it on and, like, just take... everything out of the room that could be a distraction. The dog, the phone.
Oh, absolutely. If you know...
Crunchy wrappers.
Oh, boy. Definitely not the kind of movie you want to bring snacks to. But, you know, if you, like me and Kim, are the kind of people that get distracted easily, I would highly recommend putting your phone and your tablet away when you sit down to watch Relic. It is the kind of movie you're going to want to turn the lights off for and, like, really immerse yourself in. Partly because it's a bit of a slow burn, but a lot of it is...
super moody.
Super moody, and deals with the relationships between three generations of women in this insulated family. And, you know, like your own family, it's a lot that goes unspoken that says the most.
That feels like a crochet, John.
Something a spiteful grandmother would put in.
Coming soon to the Nightmare on Film Street merch store.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
John crochets.
They would look awful.
A happy home is a haunted home.
Okay, well, that one I'd buy.
Trademarked just now.
If this is your first time hearing about Relic, honestly, I would encourage you to go check out the short film Creswick. I really think it plays well. You don't think so?
Check out Creswick after you watch Relic. Because they are very complimentary of one another. But I think there's some imagery in Creswick that might take away from maybe some elements of Relic. I think if you're unfamiliar.
I think you're totally right. Okay, so I take back what I said.
Creswick after Relic.
Just you know, be... happy that when Relic finishes and you're like, oh god, I need another movie like that in my life, there's a short film that you can check out right now on YouTube for free. It's released through Alter, which I think is the horror arm of Gunpowder and Sky. Yeah, it's on there right now. I highly recommend you check it out later. But Relic, we keep tiptoeing around it because we don't want to talk too much about it. But the movie features three incredible performances from three amazing actresses who you'll recognize all of them. The matriarch of the family is a woman named Edna, played by Robin Niven, who you'll recognize from the Matrix trilogy, if you're as obsessed with the Matrix trilogy as I once was. she's one of the counselors in the Underground Society. But also Emily Mortimer, who, of course, from Shutter Island.
And the Scream franchise.
And the Scream franchise. Scream 3 specifically, right?
I couldn't remember which one. That's why I said franchise.
It's the best one. How could we forget?
Is it, though, John?
Depends who you're asking. And
depends what bangs of Courtney Cox you're into.
Yeah, and Bella Heathcote.
I think third is my favorite bangs. Okay, I'm sorry. Continue.
And Bella Heathcote, who you'll probably recognize from The Neon Demon. They're all incredible in the movie, and it's a very personal story, but also feels the same when, like, as an audience member. Like, I think we've all experienced something like this, or at least know somebody close to us who has, about going to see someone that's at a point in their life where maybe
they're losing themselves a little bit.
Yeah, like they need to maybe be taken care of. And like, that's heartbreaking in itself, but what if it's also a fucking horror movie, guys?
Well, and this is something that's so widespread. We all have to deal with the aging process, whether it's kind of the realization that we ourselves are going to have to go through that, but also because we've all experienced aging with the elderly members of our family, either your grandparents, your great-grandparents, your parents.
Yeah.
There's different stages of life, and that final stage is not something that is talked about out in the open as much. And as a horror fan, obviously that's something perfect to explore through the horror genre, because there's so many beautiful and painful emotions there. And, oh God, Relic is just such a gut-wrenching and wonderful fucking journey through that experience. And it's, oh boy,
it's the most devastating movie I've seen all year. It's insane.
Yeah, I don't know if we've talked about it at all on the podcast before.
We haven't.
I definitely like bawled my eyes out afterwards. And
oh yeah,
it was a weird kind of cry where subconsciously, like, I was reacting to the imagery. There's some really great imagery in the finale. I physically reacted to the imagery before I had, like, consciously processed it, which is really weird. Like, I had just started crying before I thought about it. I was like, oh my God, that's some really great images. But I was already crying. It was so weird. The last time I had a really, like, raw reaction, I think, was seeing Hereditary in the theater.
Sure.
I don't know if a lot of general audiences kind of got into Hereditary as much as we anticipated people were, but I remember seeing it and being really, like, shooketh afterwards. Like, I was full out, like, haunted after seeing Hereditary, and I haven't had an experience like that in a couple years. And having that kind of experience in my own home, watching a movie on VOD, is pretty awesome, because I've been missing the theater experience. Mm-hmm. I've been missing, like, that connection to movies. And seeing Relic and getting so, like, swept away by it emotionally and visually, it's a really unique experience. And it's great to see that movies can still capture you at home like that.
Oh, yeah.
Because if I had seen this in the theater, John, you would have been, like, rushing me out of the theater with, like, a hood over my head.
We would have both had to leave the theater with jackets over our faces.
Or somebody would, like, one of those employees trying to sweep up popcorn would have been like, can you two please leave? And we're like, not yet.
It's so true, though. And, like, we do talk about it a little bit in the interview you're about to hear, because it did have its premiere at Sundance, and I could not imagine. Like, I've seen some... I'm a crier.
Can you imagine being, like, a crier with a badge on?
Oh,
be like,
right?
I'm working right now.
No, not even that. Imagine it's the 1990s, and we're getting those TV ad spots where they're literally interviewing people coming out of the...
Oh,
what
God.
Did you think? Like, oh, boy, I'm dead inside right now. just...
Kill me now!
Oh, boy. And, you know, like, we talk a lot about how impactful the end of the movie is. And again, I want to stress that there are absolutely no spoilers in the interview. We almost don't even really talk about the plot so much. Like, we talk about the emotional journey that this movie takes you on, and also Natalie's journey getting the film made. But, you know, if also hearing about a movie being super sad and devastating isn't something that immediately grabs your attention, the horror imagery in this movie is also incredibly haunting.
Mm-hmm. It's a very spooky, isolated house in the woods vibe. Like, you're getting all those traditional horror moments.
Some incredible nightmare imagery, like almost like a haunted house that exists inside your own soul. But like, I will say, even just the opening of the movie, like the cold open is some of the most haunting shit I've seen this year.
Like,
we've watched this movie twice now.
The water going down the stairs was
was
a full, no, John, it's not a spoiler. It was the first 30 seconds. It is the one of the most lasting images in horror. Yes. And I fucking enjoyed it. Like, as somebody who really, really loves the oatmeal in Nightmare on Elm Street, the water going down the stairs was just such a haunting image. Oh, man, I love this movie so much.
Yeah, this movie is an experience, and I cannot wait to talk to you all about it after you've had a chance to see it. You know, it is a shame that this movie hasn't had a chance to have a full theatrical run, and to, like Kim was saying, and like we talk about in the interview, to really get that communal sense of seeing something in a dark enclosed space the way we want to see horror movies, but it still pulls something out of you, which is a testament to the power of filmmaking and the power that this movie has, and you know, the incredible talent behind everybody involved, including writer director Natalie Erica James.
Before we send you off to the interview, you can take a quick listen to the trailer. By the way, the film is hitting VOD July 10th, so mark that down on your calendars. It will also be in drive-ins, so check and see if it's hitting you actually with a theatrical quote-unquote release.
Yeah, IFC Midnight has been, IFC in general, has been doing an incredible job with the drive-in releases, because not only are they making sure that you have the opportunity to see this at the only movie theater that's safe to visit right now, they are also doing classic drive-in movie posters for each of the releases.
Like so cool.
Like The Wretched, and even Relic, which it's so weird to see like a grindhouse type trailer poster for this like really slow burn movie. But they're incredible, and IFC deserves a lot of awards for what they've been able to do during the quarantine.
And just a little note, it's just John and Natalie at the top of the interview because I arrived a little tardy, but I'm there. I promise I'm there.
You make an appearance. fashionably late, we like to call it in the biz.
It was fashionably late. But here's the trailer for Relic.
When was the last time you spoke to her?
It's been a few weeks.
Gran? Mom?
She called me a few weeks ago. I think she was scared. She thought someone was coming into the house.
Tea?
Do you know where you were, Mum?
I suppose I went out.
What's this?
I was on the property when your grandfather inherited it. His mind wasn't there in the end. You can't put Gran in a home. She can't live on her own anymore. She has to be watched.
Everything all right, Gran?
I thought this was where it got in.
Who?
Whoever it was coming into the house.
Mum, what is it?
It's here. Under the bed.
There's nothing under the bed, Mum.
Will you check for me?
I'm here to help you, Mum.
I can see you. Seems unfamiliar.
Natalie, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today about your upcoming film Relic. And congratulations also on your debut feature. You're really coming out of the gate crazy strong.
That's amazing to hear. Thanks so much.
We're also really, really big fans of your short Creswick when we saw it a few years ago at, I think it was at Fantastic Fest. And we were dying to see a feature film from you, and I'm so happy that it's finally here.
Amazing. Yeah, we definitely made that as like a conscious proof of concept, so I'm glad it worked.
Yeah, that short really sits with you, and I just rewatched it again also before we sat down to talk, and it still hits. And I'm amazed at how it I'm amazed at how it works as sort of a companion piece to Relic. But do you see it as more of a spiritual sequel or just an expansion?
Yeah, because we had already written a first draft of Relic, we, instead of trying to cram it into a short film to make a proof of concept, we kind of very consciously thought, okay, let's come up with a story that is much more succinct, but still captures the same tone and theme and setting as well. So I would say they're pretty strongly linked, and I think you can see a lot of Creswick in Relic as well, in a few elements. Certainly, you know, the tone and what it's saying, but also certain motifs like the father's chair becoming Ed's candles. You know, there's a character who's having kind of childhood nightmares resurface, and this image of like a figure in the forest that also is quite consistent. So
it was a conscious choice to remove the idea of a like all female cast dealing with like three generations of women in a family. Was that solely to tell, because it was, you didn't have enough time to tell as much of a complicated story in Creswick?
Yeah, it felt like there was a lot more setup required in, you know, the plot of Relic that we didn't have time for in Creswick. And, you know, Creswick also came from a pretty personal place as well. My dad was quite ill for some time when I was 18, 19. And so I lived with him while he was recovering. And yeah, I guess it was like feelings of a role reversal between parent and child in a certain way. So that, I think, carried over both in Creswick and Relic, but just focusing on different types of relationships.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Does a project like this, that's obviously so personal to you, does that make it easier to deal with the horror that's at the center of this story, or is it a little more complicated?
I hope so. Yeah, I don't know. It could just be like an exercise in masochism, right? I'm not sure. But I think so. I think it's a way to work through your emotions in a way. And I think most writing is a way of processing. And you know, hopefully, I feel like the most important thing is to be truthful. And so in writing something like this, it's useful, but it's also essential in, I guess, talking about your own experience, or at least your emotional experience, if not, you know, the real thing, because obviously Relic is very, very heightened.
Yeah, I would hope so, at least. Yeah, like it's the emotion is definitely there. And yeah, this movie is really devastating in a way, like in more than one way, really. And I don't know that I've really seen another horror movie that's so heartfelt and impactful, especially the entire movie. But the ending is deeply unsettling in the most loving way possible. That had to be hard to juggle all of that together.
Yeah, I think the biggest tonal reference that we pointed to in the making of it was something like Jay Bayona's The Orphanage.
Okay.
You know, it has that really emotional gut punch at the end, but then the scares throughout are also terrifying. And it was definitely a balancing act. I think in the process of making the film, you often get feedback from people in the script process as well as edit. And it was interesting to me how much some people wanted to push the horror and some people wanted to push the drama. Mm-hmm. But I kind of knew it had to straddle both. And it was very much forefront of our minds, but also a tricky balancing act.
I can only imagine. You know, like every movie is a long journey to get to the screen. Like you said, you'd made Creswick as a proof of concept. Were there, like, mm-hmm. can you talk to me a little bit more about developing this and selling it? Like, was this a hard sell? Because it goes to some pretty dark territory.
Yeah, so developing it, we worked. I had some Aussie producers on board from the get-go. And so we worked with our state funding body, Screen Australia and Film Victoria. And they were great. Like, I feel like at no point was someone like, you are taking this too far. Then when we got American partners on board, conversely, I felt like they were like, no, you need to like push this further. and maybe Australia's approach is more like, no, this is a drama with horror elements. So yeah, it was fascinating, the kind of push and pull between the two. But I think the biggest pushback I got was on the ending, not necessarily from development people, but sometimes from, I guess, you know, people who had read the script and want to have conversations, or some HODs who are like, how are you going to make this, you know, emotional and have the emotional impact that you want it to, because it just sounds grotesque to me. But, you know, that was the one thing that I think people got stuck on. But I'm glad we didn't, you know, pull back on it, because, you know, for me, it's almost like a funeral, right? I won't spoil the ending, but it's tied to real emotion. And that's how, you know, Emily played it in her character. And so I think that's why it manages to have the intended effect while still not, you know, pulling the genre punches.
Yeah, no, it definitely works. And, you know, like, obviously there's so much credit to your actors for it. But just a side note, I guess, the few people I know in the press circle that have seen this movie, the majority of the conversation that we're having is like, so how much did you cry at the end of this movie? Because it has devastated everybody that I know.
Oh, I hate to say that's amazing to hear, but that is amazing to hear. I feel like my job is done in a way.
That's perfect. Sorry, Kim is here with us now.
Hello. Sorry, I'm late.
Oh, great.
We were just talking
about... No worries, hi Kim.
Hi.
We were just talking about how much we all cried at the end of the movie.
I'm so glad I made it for this. I cried so hard.
Oh, amazing. Thank you. That's awesome.
What was it like working with Bella and Emily and Robin together? They all look like they really inhabit these characters, right?
Yeah, they're all so incredible. And I feel really lucky, especially as a first-timer, that they seem to just really trust me. Yeah, they certainly challenged me, of course, but it really did feel like a proper collaboration. And, you know, making a horror film is emotionally taxing on these guys. I think Bella cried for about 4 days straight.
Oh,
so, yeah, so you have to go to some dark places and dredge up a lot of your own shit. So for them to be willing to, you know, go there with me was, I just feel so lucky and blessed, really.
Have you had a chance to talk or watch the movie with anybody that was maybe worried about the ending being too dark and emotional?
Good question. No, not really. I have to say, I sat in the first Sundance screening and have not watched it since, because I think you just get so, you know, worn out by the post-production process, and I've probably watched it, you know, 300 times all up. So, yeah, not really. I am curious, though. Maybe they haven't seen it yet, but I'd be curious to see what people expected on the page and, you know, the final result.
And what, like, just because, I mean, like, we you know, we see the big movies that make their way out of Australia, but, like, what is the horror filmmaking community like in Australia right now?
I think it's pretty healthy. I mean, we tend to make films that are much lower budget, but I think there's a thinking you know, in America as well, that you can make horror for lower budget, even though it's an appealing kind of avenue for a lot of people. I'm personally, I feel like I've got a little gang of specifically like female horror directors. There's quite a few of us, I feel. And yeah, I think it's pretty, I think traditionally there's an idea about how horror performs in the Aussie box office. Like apparently it doesn't play that well.
Oh.
I think the Babadook is like an exception. So it's quite different to the States, but certainly that doesn't mean there's not a lot of horror being made. And I think it's quite exciting at the moment. There's so many, you know, young Aussie directors who are working in the genre space. So yeah, I think it's pretty great overall. I think someone said the phrase Aussie new wave, like genre new wave.
Oh, cool.
I'm not sure if that's a thing, but, you know, it would be cool if it was.
Well, yeah, because you would be part of it, obviously.
Yeah, that sounds pretty rad, yeah.
And is that, like, a space that you want to stay in? Like, do you want to continue working in genre film and keep with horror?
Yeah, everything I'm writing at the moment I'm writing three scripts, and they're all kind of sub-genres within horror. So I think I'm definitely have always been drawn to telling stories in this way and through this genre. But, you know, my tastes are a little bit broader as well. Like, I'm a big fan of, I suppose, like, psychological drama in general and grounded sci-fi and maybe stuff that has, like, a elevated kind of magical realism element to it.
Mm.
I'm not super interested by, you know, telling really realism and cinema verite kind of stories. I love watching them, but it's just not the way that my brain works.
Has being stuck at home during like a pandemic given you any inspiration for new stories at all?
I've written a couple of short films with my partner who's also a filmmaker, and they're all just, you know, kind of silly horror films that hinge on one visual kind of image. And I think we're still hoping to shoot something just for fun. Yeah, like no one would ever see it. That's the thing. But I have to say that isolation has definitely, I guess it's not too different from my normal routine in terms of writing. And this year was supposed to be more about traveling and going to festivals as relics. But conversely, it forced me to just focus on the writing, which, you know, I guess isn't a bad thing in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, that's actually kind of unfortunate that Relic's going to miss out on that big kind of festival experience, because this movie will get you talking. Like, it's got a lot of a really strong emotional core. So it's kind of unfortunate that we don't get to get that, like, live first viewing experience with everybody.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's a few festivals that it's still going to play at overseas. So I think it's playing in Korea pretty soon. And,
oh, cool.
Yeah, maybe, like, some European countries. So it's got a bit of a life, but I doubt I'll make it across the ocean to attend. Yeah.
Well, at the very least, I know it's coming to
still, like,
North America.
That's sweet.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yes, which is fantastic. And I'm infinitely grateful that we, you know, managed to squeeze in our premiere, because I know a lot of filmmakers didn't even get that first screening. So
this is a great time for VOD, though.
Very true.
Like, yeah.
And we're all in need of a good ugly cry. I can't get over the idea of like it is unfortunate that this isn't gonna play at some festivals, because there have been festivals I've been to where I watched a big sad movie, and it's hilarious to watch a group of people just with red swollen eyes trying to mingle in with other people that watched a comedy for the last hour and a half. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I think particularly for horror as well, you just want that cinema experience for the audience, because there's no escape, you know? Like, you can't just scroll on your phone in a lit, you know, room at home. It's, like, dark, there's something primal about it, and you're going to experience it with other people. So I think that's still, you know, the ideal condition, but, the idea is still exciting.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. And thankfully, drive-ins are still open.
So we can still go see a horror movie when they're available at drive-ins. And, you know, we like to ask everybody, if you could program a double feature at the drive-in, what would your dream double feature be at a drive-in movie theater?
I would probably go with maybe like something like Don't Look Now and The Shining.
Ooh,
that's a great double bill.
Yeah, I feel like they should always have some nostalgia elements to them. But yeah,
that's perfect. Those are two very also unsettling movies that just send you off in like a very weird emotional state once they're done. It's a very on brand.
Some favorites.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for taking the time to talk to us, Natalie. We can't wait for everybody to check out Relic. And yeah, like it's already in my top 10 of 2020. Well.
Oh, brilliant. Really appreciate your thoughts and for taking the time as well. Thank you.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.